It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama. Your calls, comments, and texts are welcome at 251-343-0106.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do. And don't you ever forget that.
And now your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
TGIF. Thank God it's Friday. Good evening to the FM Talk 106.5 listening audience. My name is Robert Kennedy Jr. I am your Chief Accountability Advocate, and this is Kennedy for Alabama. Thank you so much for tuning in to our seventh episode. We're really excited about tonight's program, so let's get to it. In studio, we have three fantastic members of this evening's conversation team. The first is Miss Aquilyn Kennedy.
Hey there.
My lovely wife. The second is Miss Zoe Zagers, president of the Bay Area Young Democrats.
Hi.
And the third is Miss Lynn Olshue, who is a storyteller, interviewer, listener, and author of Our Southern Souls and Beyond the Byline.
Lynn waves.
And finally, completing the in-studio team is Mr. Phil Bush, who is working the production board and waving in silence. So, how's everybody doing this evening?
Fantastic.
Yeah, doing super great.
Yeah, it's Friday. So.
It is Friday indeed, especially after dodging all of these raindrops, right?
Yep.
Cool. So we'll start off with Aquilyn. Aquilyn, tell me something good.
All right. We have some really good stuff going on this coming week.
Okay.
So what's going to happen? This time I'm going to focus a little more on Mobile. How about that? And right now, at this very moment, the Women of Vision are having an event at the Christ Anglican Church. So
Yes. If
you're listening, head on over to the Christ Anglican Church. It's a wonderful event focused on denial, projection, blaming, and hidden in plain sight. So really supporting women. I just wanted to highlight a couple of other things that are coming up soon. Tomorrow, Let's Think Pink. That's a breast cancer awareness event in Pritchard.
Okay.
We'd love for you to take a look. Find it on Facebook. Really nice and easy. Fem South is having a film night tomorrow. I spoke with the founder of Fem South Book Club yesterday. She is amazing. You guys should definitely take a look at that. That's F-E-M-M South.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
And finally, next Tuesday, an organization that I am working with, actually as a board member, the Women's Business Alliance, has Witches in Wine Halloween Party. It is a wonderful costume party benefiting organizations, women who are leading organizations and companies, just training and whatnot. So it's a fantastic organization, and we're having a costume party at the Alchemy Tavern with fantastic silent auction items. Do not miss it.
Well, thank you, Aquilyn, for all of that Tell Me Something Good content. So let's go to the agenda. In the top half of the hour, we'll review three news headlines from the past week or so. We'll introduce tonight's first discussion topic, start the conversation in studio with Ms. Zagers, and continue the conversation on the phone lines. In the bottom of the half of the hour, we'll do a quick citizen spotlight with Ms. Olshue. We'll introduce tonight's second discussion topic and continue the conversation until we run out of time at the top of the hour. Now for the headlines. The first headline comes from the WallStreetJournal.com opinion page. It reads, Trump wins every Democratic debate. It was written by Bobby Jim Dell and published on the 13th of October, 2019. What did the author say? Lots of voters dislike the president, but will be convinced to vote for him by seeing his opponents. The second headline comes from the National Review. It reads, Klobuchar and Buttigieg stand out in an otherwise dull and plodding night. The article was written by Jim Garrity and published on the 15th of October, 2019. What did the author say? The October Democratic debate finally brought a genuine surprise when a pair of second-tier candidates who were in danger of being forgotten woke up, smelled the coffee, and brought their A-game. The final headline for tonight's show comes from the CNNpolitics.com. The headline reads, Debate Winners and Losers. According to Kritz Silliz. This was an opinion piece, and it was published on the 15th of October, 2019. The author said the winners were Mayor Pete, Senator Amy Klobuchar, Andrew Yang, and Senator Bernie Sanders. He said the losers were Senator Elizabeth Warren, Vice President Joe Biden, Senator Kamala Harris, Tom Steyer, and last but no wise least, the Bing search engine. So, Zoe,
Yes.
What do you think?
Where do I even start?
Where do you start, indeed?
I guess we'll go reverse order. So in terms of winners and losers, I think, well, winners and losers is already kind of a weird question because who really wins? We're trying to learn about the candidates. But I would say they're probably correct. I think Amy Klobuchar and Pete, they put a really strong showing and made a more passionate case than I think in the past for more moderate arguments in terms of healthcare and some other policy stuff. But I think Elizabeth Warren, this was the first time that she was considered like the front runner status.
Right.
I think she's finally passed Biden in
Some areas, particularly the early states. Mm-hmm.
So, and you could tell that she was definitely the focus. And there was maybe some cracks, but I think she held her own and she was extremely gracious the entire night. And you can tell that she is like a real leader. I mean, she's setting the agenda in terms of what people are talking about in terms of policy. And people are kind of reacting to her, which means that she's being a strong presence in the race. And I find her very inspirational. I'm happy that she's there. And I think, yeah, she's a great candidate.
You know, it's interesting. So I do a segment on Thursday mornings with Sean Sullivan, and he and I go back and forth after each one of these debates. And so whenever I answer this question, I put it into two buckets. The first is with my political scientist hat on. So when we talk about this from the perspective of a criteria, usually when you're doing a presidential debate, you are in an expectations game. So as long as the candidate meets expectations, they will continue to maintain their name recognition and they will continue to maintain their ability to raise money.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, consistently across the board, I've said every single time that Elizabeth Warren has definitely brought her A game. She has presented herself with poise and professionalism, and she continues to fuel her ability to raise money. Now, that's not what I believe personally, but I can evaluate her academically and say she definitely did this. Now, personally, when I take my political scientist hat off and I become Robert Kennedy Jr., I am a centrist.
Yeah.
I am a moderate, and I am unapologetic about being passionate about that fact. So I could not have been happier that Amy Klobuchar finally showed up and started swinging, as well as Mayor Pete Buttigieg, because I believe the centrists are really the key to this game. And this debate that we need to have internally within our progressive and moderate wings is something that absolutely has to happen. So with that, I'm actually going to go to the break here for just a few minutes. So please stay with us, and you'll see us there on the other side. You're listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Lines are open at 251-343-0106. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. For those of you who are just joining us, we started a little bit of a conversation in studio with Zoe, who is the president of the Bay Area Young Democrats, talking a little bit about the presidential debate that happened earlier in the week. So when we went to the break there, I just spent a little bit of time talking about what I will affectionately refer to as return of the centrist. So what did you think about that?
Well, I just liked listening to Amy Klobuchar be very passionate, especially when she was talking about the opioid crisis. You could really tell that it was an emotional issue for her. And I think it's great when politicians actually seem like they care about stuff and are emotional about the issues. But I also think it's interesting that we now talk about Pete as a centrist, because he really didn't even start out the campaign as centrist. He has a lot of kind of interesting and new ideas in terms of like the Supreme Court.
Well, he's a McKinsey consultant. What would you expect?
Exactly. Yeah. I'm a big fan of Pete. I think he brings a lot of really great points to the Justice General when in his politics, and he's really a clear communicator, which is very refreshing. So,
okay. Well, for those of you who are listening, if you'd like to give us a comment, please call in at area code 251-343-0106. So let's go to the phone line and see who we have on. Hello, you are on the line with Kennedy for Alabama. Who do we have?
You have Thomas from Theodore.
Hi, Thomas from Theodore. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. How are you doing?
Oh, I am blessed as always. Thank you so much for calling in. What's on your mind?
Well, I haven't talked much about this Trump, this president we have, but this has just gone too far. They're using chemical weapons now against the Kurd.
Okay.
And apparently I'm blind. But my wife was telling me what they were showing on the TV tonight. And can't we stop this guy? Can't the military? I think he's a psycho. Can't the military go in and take him out of office?
Okay. Well, thanks a lot for the call and for your feedback and your perspective. One of the wonderful things about us here in the United States of America is that we have civilian control of the military. So as a former military officer myself, when we take the oath of office to the Constitution of the United States, one of the things that we do is, as long as the president is operating in accordance with the law, is that we will continue to follow him. The proper way for something to happen if he actually does something that is not in accordance with the law is for the House of Representatives to impeach and the Senate to remove him. Now, I know we haven't been talking about that on this particular topic, but that is very important for us to continue to communicate to the listening audience. We do not do coups in the United States of America. We do not do military coups in the United States of America, and that is one of the wonderful things about our country. But thank you so much for your call. So we're going to go to the phone line here and see who our next caller is. You are on the line with Kennedy for Alabama. Who do we have?
Hey, Bobby, it's Han.
Hey, Han, how are you doing today?
I'm good. What's going on?
Nothing much. Just been dodging raindrops here in Mobile, Alabama. So yeah. For the folks who are in the listening audience right now, why don't you just tell them just a little bit about where you're from and what you've been doing, just so they know who they're actually listening to on the phone line.
Okay, I'm Han. I grew up in Mobile. I went to school there, you know, Phillips Prep and Murphy. And then went off to college in Boston. I recently returned home. I'm called Boomerang about 2.5 years ago. And people found out my background, so I started, I guess, some political consulting.
Okay. Well, thank you
but
so
much. By trade, I'm a realtor.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for calling in. So a lot of things happening in the world. We just had the Democratic presidential debates earlier in the week. So just given your background with what you did from a political consulting perspective, what are the types of things that you think the listening audience should be considering as they're hearing about presidential debates, evaluating presidential debates, and ultimately deciding which candidate to put themselves behind?
For me, it's always been about the person.
Okay.
I know policy difference between individuals slightly, but for me, whether I can trust that person to make the decision and stick with their moral compass.
Okay, cool. So I know it's probably a little bit too early for any of us to have settled on one particular individual, but are there any of the folks from a personality standpoint who are sort of resonating with you right now that you're paying a little bit more attention to other than other folk?
So people ask me this all the time. I actually don't know who I'll vote for until I actually go to the booth in March for the primary in Alabama. Elizabeth Warren has been trending up.
Okay.
Her chief of staff is also her campaign manager now, and he's Asian American.
Okay.
So I think that's why she has a lot of policy coming out. I know Pete Buttigieg gets a lot of energy behind, because he's young, fresh,
yes,
something mm-hmm. different. Andrew Yang is firing up a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then you always have the Biden camp, and then Kamala and Corey. I guess those are like the top 5 or 6, I would say.
Okay.
Who makes you feel good, though? Who do you like?
I really don't know.
I agree completely. I think values is so important for what we're looking for, because ultimately being a president is a job that takes – I mean, I think Pete's actually said this very well. It takes a lot of hubris to want to be in that role. And you can't prepare for every single hard decision you're going to have to make, but we have to trust that the person that we put in office is going to make the hard decisions and make them for our country and have good values and be smart and want to learn. So I think those are the qualities that are the most important thing. And I think we have a lot of candidates who meet that threshold. So.
You know, it's actually interesting, because thinking back to kind of growing up and what you were looking for originally in a president, and this is before you get into any issues associated with policy, but historically we were looking for background, experience set, and we were also looking for character.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just amazing to think about how little emphasis is placed upon character at this particular point in time. Definitely something that would be good for us to get back towards.
Yeah. Well, I mean, policy is important because I think it shows you what your values are, right? And
okay.
It's a good metric to see what's important to people. But a president isn't the one who's going to be passing legislation. It's going to be the House, right? So they're going to be the
yes.
leader. So you need somebody who's going to be strong and be compassionate and take care of people and just be really have a strong, firm moral compass because there are going to be a lot of tough decisions that they'll have to make.
Yeah, that is critically important. So, Han, what else, just from your perspective and looking at the issues that are going on today, even though you're not prepared to support any particular presidential candidate, are there any issues in particular that are resonating with you as we continue the conversation throughout this primary season?
I think for us, as I'm an elder millennial, so to speak. How do
we? Yes, you recently had a birthday. Happy belated!
Thank you. As how do we shape policies that our grandparents and parents have made, and in their trending of their policy has made them well?
Okay, Han, do I still have you?
Because you know they've worked hard. They want to enjoy their life. But in enjoying their life, they're borrowing from our future financially, environmentally, however you want to say it.
Okay, I see what you're saying. You know, one of the reasons why I invited Zoe in, and one of the reasons why I was so enthusiastic about you calling in as well, is really that millennial focus. And so there was a question that was asked in the presidential debate of Representative Gabbard. Representative Gabbard, when they were essentially questioning her for along with Mayor Pete being on the younger end of the spectrum. So from y'all's perspective, as in your case, Zoe, as a millennial, and Han as a senior millennial, what is it that you think about the age question? Does that concern you at all, or do you have any preference one way or another?
I think it's great having young people in office. They bring fresh ideas and fresh perspective, and I think both Tulsi and Pete, I think are extremely qualified. They're the only ones there who have military experience. Mm-hmm. They're both extremely intelligent people, and I think having new people who are looking at things from a new way and they have actual skin in the game, they're the ones
indeed
who are going to be affected. Mm-hmm. Most of our older candidates won't be around probably in the next 20 years, so the long-term consequences won't have as many direct impacts. So I think it's really critical having those other perspectives, and especially my generation, like we grew up around 9/11, and that completely changes like your perspective on the world. And I think bringing that into the Oval Office would be great.
Absolutely. Han, did you have any additional thoughts on that one?
I don't think age should be an issue, but I think a lot of people are like, oh, experience, you need to have experience in order to if you're in the executive office, right? Bring people to a consensus. But as the current administration show, you don't really need political experience. And as the new 2018 congressional representative shows, you don't. Sometimes you just need fresh ideas and solutions. And I think for me, and I think the big debate, I guess, everyone talks about is healthcare, right? We're going to have to solve it in my generation. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're going to bankrupt the system.
Right. You know, it's interesting. I recall a conversation that I was having, and it was actually with one of my former coworkers who lives out on the West Coast. And I do think that it's important to have experience, but the key isn't the number of years of experience you have. It's whether or not your experience is relevant to what the issues are today. So in the case of international policy and being in these, quote, forever wars, having two individuals on the stage who have actually worn uniform to a certain extent makes their experience more relevant, because they were the ones who actually had to deal with those particular issues on the ground. The same thing whenever you talk about needing to have diversity, and we're talking about diversity that extends beyond racial and gender diversity, having some age diversity and diversity of experiences also sets the stage to have a better team. And whether you're talking about the ability of Congress to work together with the president, whether you're talking about the ability of private industry to work with the public sector, that ultimately is going to take all of us working together in order to continue to move the nation forward. Any other thoughts that you had on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's beyond that, there's just particular issues that affect young people more, like gun control is a big one. Like for me, I grew up right next to where Sandy Hook was, and I was in high school at the time of when the shooting was, about 20 minutes away from me. And so I think those issues are a lot more poignant for people of my age, and like we're the ones that are continuing to be affected by it. So that and climate change are like the most important things that young people bring into the debate perspective. So
okay. Han, do you have anything else to share with us on this topic before you leave us?
No, that's all. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. I know you're hanging out there in Boston. Hopefully it hasn't got too cold for you yet, and you've been able to watch some of the foliage.
Bye. I have. I'm glad I'm away from the tropical storm. Y'all hanging tight.
All right. You take care now.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. So we still have about 3 minutes or so before the break. And one of the things that I definitely wanted to take the time to touch on was you are currently working with the Bay Area Young Democrats. So tell us a little bit about the organization. Tell us what you are focusing on. And I believe you have a meeting or an event tomorrow. So tell us about that.
Yes, we do. So we're the Bay Area Young Democrats. So we represent Mobile and Baldwin County.
Okay.
And we have events roughly monthly, and they range over different topics. We usually have either we have candidates come and speak, or we have advocates come and talk about different issues. For example, this month, tomorrow, CERTA's downtown 1 p.m., we're doing a climate change advocacy. So we're having Riva Frolic from the Citizens Climate Lobby come and talk
absolutely.
About what you can do to help advocate for climate change and different policies. That's super important in the Gulf Coast. As we all know, we're very affected by the shores changing.
Very much so.
Yeah. So it's a great way to meet other young people who are really interested in being advocates. And we do a lot of voter registration. Mobile County, about half of the population is not registered to vote.
That's amazing to me, just given the fact how easy it is to do that.
Yeah, so everybody should register to vote. That's, I have to say that too. So we go about once a week and we go to different areas in the neighborhood and register people.
Okay.
So if you're interested in volunteering, follow us on Facebook, Bay Area Young Democrats. We have Instagram as well, which is also Bay Area Young Democrats.
Makes it easy.
Exactly. It's a great organization. Usually go to bars and hang out and talk about politics and sometimes not politics. So,
hey, that is a beautiful thing. Let me ask you just a couple more questions before the break. So the first thing is, how do you, as the Bay Area Young Democrats, interact with other organizations? I'm thinking Spring Hill College, Bishop State, University of South Alabama, et cetera. Do you guys have opportunities to interact with any of them?
Yeah, we do. We work fairly closely with the College Dems of South. So we do some events with them, and we communicate with them often, working with each other and volunteering and stuff like that. We also work a lot with the Mobile Democratic Executive Committee.
Okay.
Do a lot of work with them, and we're working on building relationships with the Baldwin County Party as well, so we make sure we're hitting both shores and really making sure that we're expanding our base and bringing all the people together that are in this area. And we frequently partner with events with other organizations, and that's how we kind of bring them in. So we did stuff with we had the Mobile Baykeepers come for an event. So we work a lot with different organizations and try and give them a platform to talk about what they're doing and stuff like that.
Well, I can't say enough about the work that I've seen you and your organization do personally. You're definitely leading. And people talk about the millennials being the leaders of the future, that you are, in fact, the leaders of now. And so I want to take this opportunity to say to you publicly, I really appreciate all the things that you're doing, particularly when it comes to getting young people to participate in the process. We all have different opinions on what we think the highest priority is right now. But if nothing else, you're actually part of the process, you're participating, and you're looking to try to make things better. And that is a fantastic thing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So with that, we are going to go to our bottom of the hour news break. Enjoy listening to what's happening in the world. And we will be back in a second to continue with our second discussion topic.
It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama. Your calls, comments, and texts are welcome at 251-343-0106.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do. And don't you ever forget that.
And now your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Thank you guys so much for listening to our show. For those of you who may just be joining us, we spent the first half of the show talking a little bit about the presidential debates that happened earlier in the week. We started off talking about it in terms of winners and losers, both from a political science perspective as well as just kind of our general thoughts and feelings. We actually had a caller who called in and shared some of her experience and perspective as well. We really, really enjoyed having that conversation. So if you're listening and you want to hear more about that or share some thoughts with us, please call in at area code 251-343-0106. Again, that's 251-343-0106. So at this point, we are going to transition to our second discussion topic. Lynn, welcome to Kennedy for Alabama.
Well, thanks for having me on.
I am really, really excited about this opportunity for us to spend a little time talking. So before we get into the second discussion topic, what did you think about our first discussion?
I learned a lot, and there are some names like I'm glad to learn how to pronounce in the correct way.
Edge.
Yeah. But what Zoe said, I keep thinking about that, about how her generation grew up with, 9/11 and gun violence. And that's not something our generation grew up with. I mean, we were growing up with MTV and 16 Candles. And,
exactly.
And it kind of makes you aware of this. I mean, I've got teenage boys in this world that we're sending our kids off into. And I want it to be this safe, happy place for everybody to grow up. And what an anxious time to – we were just talking about that with Zoe of how stressful that must be when that's what you see of the world now.
Yeah, if nothing else, it reminds us that we have work to do.
Right.
And I know that we have a range of different thoughts on gun violence. But one of the things that I often stress when we start to talk about this was if you take the gun away for the time being, that we have a problem with violence.
Right.
And so one of the things that we have to talk about is how do we create an environment where people aren't using violence as a tool to get what they want. So we definitely have work to do.
Right.
Well, what I really wanted to spend a little bit of time talking to you about is your work. So I know you have Our Southern Souls,
right.
And I know you recently started Beyond the Byline.
Right.
So as a person who does a lot of interviewing and listening and storytelling, my question for you is, what have you learned about the lives of residents here in Southwest Alabama
right. That
may not be getting a lot of attention in some other places?
Well, I was thinking about y'all were talking of, politics. I mean, just listen to it all makes me crazy. I'm like, oh my gosh, how do you fix any of this? And like the violence, all the things you said. And for me, I get to interview strangers every day and people who give me hope and
yes.
people who are going through some of the worst things you can imagine. And they still get out of bed every day and they're still positive. I mean, and it's where I find God every day. And
wow.
For me, I know we have hope as a community, as a country, because I meet every day the people who are the heroes, and they may never realize it. But so I have to quit focusing sometimes on politics and like
mm-hmm.
on the ground. These are the people. There's so many people in Mobile doing great work and just even on their own. And I have a lot more hope just because of the people I get to meet every day.
So let's structure this just a little bit that may help the listening audience get
okay.
a better perspective on what's going on.
Okay.
So when we were talking earlier in the week, you were telling me how it is that you started doing this type of work.
Right.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about that story and what the transition is and how you ended up focusing on Our Southern Souls?
Sure. So I always wanted to be a writer. That was the dream. And no one would hire me to be to do that. So started the Southern Rambler.
Okay.
Just a magazine to kind of write and figure it all out, and started writing about artists and musicians. And met
that sounds like fun.
It was fun. And then met Vincent Lawson, and he is a photographer of the homeless in Mobile.
Mm.
And he totally changed my perspective and opened my eyes. Homeless and social issues were not on my radar. Everything was fine. If you don't know about them, it's just easy to be oblivious. And I was happily a bit oblivious just writing about art and music.
Mm-hmm.
But then Vincent, once you become aware of things, you can't ignore them. And so we did a story about the bus riders in Mobile and rode the bus for months. And I thought, there is no way they're going to let this 6-foot-tall, reddish-haired white woman on and to let me in. And I realized all the walls were mine. I would sit next to people riding the bus, and they immediately told me stories of going to chemo and going to dialysis or going to work, or how their car had broken down. If it hadn't been for the bus, they would never have made it. I mean, just survival, trying to go to the grocery store.
Mm.
And just they were so glad to have their story told and their voice heard, because they felt like they were ignored. I mean, in Mobile, the buses are just these rolling billboards for personal injury
right,
lawyers.
Right.
You don't think about the people inside and why they need them.
So here, there are three things that you said that really stuck out to me that I wanted to kind of pull on a little bit.
Okay.
So the first thing you talked about was homelessness.
Right.
Now, Aquilin and I have been fortunate enough to live a number of different places. Some of the places there on the West Coast, the housing crisis is just beyond unbelievable. But one of the things that I think surprises a lot of people is that we do, in fact, have a homeless population here in Mobile.
Right.
So how is it that you ended up connecting with that through your photographer friend? And just kind of what did you learn from interacting with the group?
So now I get to tell their stories and ask them how they got there. But also, as Mobile has pushed them out. I mean, 15 places, all these, they're making services and pushing them out of downtown.
Right.
They want it to be safer and people feel secure there. And so one way is kind of pushing all the services away from downtown, which makes it harder on the homeless population.
And then one of the things I think from a public policy perspective we talk a lot about is the criminalization of poverty.
Correct.
So now someone's panhandling because they need something to eat, and then all of a sudden they get arrested. So now they have a record. So if they wanted to get a job or get housing or whatever, it becomes a cycle that just kind of goes on and on.
And then you have the fees, and where are you going to get the money to pay that?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And then the second thing you said really, really resonated with me. Mm-hmm. So my mom had me late in life. So mm-hmm. just to provide a perspective, she graduated from high school in 1950. And she grew up in very segregated Mobile, Alabama. And so she used to talk quite a bit about some of the things that were going on racially when it came to being a young child or a young adult riding the bus. And with the exception of the time that I lived in a tri-state area in New Jersey and commuted into New York City, I was never a person who rode the bus. Mm-hmm. Because even however challenging a financial situation that me or my family was in, we always had multiple vehicles.
Right.
And so the concept of needing the bus for a transportation standpoint was a little bit foreign to me, but I really appreciate the fact that you spent that time there. So did you get any insights into what it was or the kind of demarcation between people who have perpetually rode the bus versus folks who only did it for a season?
Well, there was one woman, she had recently gotten a divorce. Her husband took the car, and so she was having to take the bus to work. And I mean, and it's not just taking the bus. It's standing there in thunderstorms, then you're trying to get it. Or they cut the bus lines right after I did the story, so people are having to ride their bike 3 miles to get to the bus stop.
Did you cross over into Pritchard at all on this? Do you remember?
No. I mean, we know we didn't go over, but I know they cut that line.
Yeah, that's what popped into my mind when you started talking about.
But I did interview people later who, like, I know they rode their bike 4 miles mm-hmm. from Pritchard to get there, just to get to work.
Right.
And, you know, they're making minimum wage, maybe, or minimum wage, or maybe a little bit more. And it's, you know, I mean, if you take Uber, that's, you know, an hour or two of work. I mean, you know, if you take any other kind of transportation, like, you're working an hour or two a day to pay transportation to get to work.
It's almost like you're paying the money to get to work to get the money to pay the bus or the Uber to get to work. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
You know, one of the other things that struck me as I was looking through some of the articles that you sent me mm-hmm. was there was one particular article about one particular individual that I do want to mention by name, and it was a story that you wrote on Champ Napier.
Right.
And so I had the privilege of meeting Champ here a couple of years ago. He was doing a seminar on reentry, and he was telling a little bit about his story. And so I'm curious if you have a, you know, African-American man who grew up in the heart of Pritchard, and now your description, a redheaded white woman telling the story, how did that whole process go, and what did you learn from interacting with Champ that may give perspective to our listening audience?
Right. Well, that's been a huge I mean, like I said, I mentioned the walls before that are mine, mm-hmm. and I've always, like, you kind of, and Champ was different. I mean, we kind of set it up, but often I walk up to people and, like, and I've learned that once you walk up to them and you show that you're interested in them and kindness, the wall's mine. It's not theirs. They are immediately receptive. And I look back over my life and how many people I missed because that wall was there.
Mm-hmm.
But for Champ, Champ's book is so good. I mean, it's hard-hitting and direct.
Powerful.
Yes.
It's powerful.
And for me, a white woman who grew up in, as my dad said, glass house, it was a chance to completely walk through a different world and understand it and how many of our kids are going through things like that and understand the difficulties of where they're coming from.
Right.
And it was good to know Champ and get to know him before I read the book. Because I kept thinking, okay, I know him. He turned out okay.
Right.
So there was the advantage of kind of foresight knowing it. But it is. It's been the best lesson of the walls between us are invisible and in our own heads. Mm-hmm. But once you cross them in the conversations, I learned a lot from Champ. And sometimes he'll send me, you know, hey, you need to interview them or... but yeah, just the chance he gave people who've never grown up in that situation a great gift to understand it.
You know, it's interesting. We're going to have the opportunity to interview Champ at some point in the future. Originally, he was supposed to be here with us tonight, right. But he had another conflict. But I like that reference that you mentioned to the walls being yours. And it reminds me of Aquilin and I, when we were running for office, would travel around and attend a lot of events that were hosted by Representative Byrne. And there were two reasons for that. One was it got us out of our Democratic echo chamber,
right,
and put us in the position where we were talking to constituents, most of whom would have been right of center at those particular events. Mm-hmm. And it just reminds me of a particular conversation we had with a gentleman in Lillian, Alabama. Mm-hmm. And he came up to Aquilin and I after the event. He just asked us if he could talk to us because he doesn't get time and opportunity to talk to people like us. Well, my first instinct, I thought he was talking about us as Democrats, uh-huh, but really he was talking about us as African Americans. And so to me, it was a little bit shocking that in the state of Alabama, right, someone would say they haven't had the opportunity to have a conversation with an African American here. But just the fact that he was willing to ask, we sat down, we got some lunch, we talked for half an hour, 45 minutes, and I think that makes an impression that whenever we can start to talk to each other, listen to each, yes, other, as you mentioned, that we really can learn a little bit.
That's the whole thing of souls for me, is the more diversity, the more pray, think, skin color, I mean, the more different footsteps you can walk through, and then you have to you understand them. I mean, there's a love, and souls is this great oasis. I'm always,
yes,
I know I can throw hard things at people. I know, mm-hmm, that they will take it with love, that they will be encouraging and supporting and realize this is just a story and this is their humanity. It's not a political debate. It's every now and then that kind of flares up a touch, but, mm-hmm, not nearly. I mean, I'm so grateful for the people who get souls and appreciate it for what it is. It's just a chance to see somebody else's humanity and what we have in common.
Absolutely. And we are grateful for you and grateful for the work that you have done. There is one thing that I did want to touch on once we get back from the other side of the break, and that's thinking of your work in terms of what were the stories, mm-hmm, that absolutely broke your heart? And the one that popped into my mind in particular was the one that was on Lagniappe. When you're talking about some of the human trafficking and stuff that was happening,
yeah,
here in the area. So,
right,
we're going to go to the break here for a few minutes. We're all going to kind of get our minds right and get our tissues ready. And let's dive into that a little bit on,
okay,
the other side of the break, if that's okay.
Sure.
So for those of you listening, you are on FM Talk 106.5 with Kennedy for Alabama. We're going to go to the break, and then we'll see you on the other side. Well, it looks like I actually started just a little bit too early. So we will try this whole process again. So for those of you who are listening, Tom, John, Bob, Levy, we will see you on the other side of the break.
Good to see a professional at work.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Lines are open at 251-343-0106. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to Kennedy for Alabama. My name is Robert Kennedy Jr. I am your Chief Accountability Advocate. And we have spent the last few minutes talking to Lynn about her writing on our Southern souls. And one of the things I wanted to dig down into just a little bit before we ended the show were the stories that really, really impacted you. And one of the stories that really, really impacted me was one that I read in the Lagniappe a little bit earlier in the year, and it was about human trafficking. Can you just tell us a little bit about how that popped up on your radar screen, and what caused you to start doing research on that topic?
Well, it started with a series about domestic violence, and did that. It was a year ago now, and talking with, the women there, the survivors. I didn't know nearly what that was.
Right.
Thankfully, I have not experienced it, but so many women have. And the women who would tell me their stories and their survivor stories, and just some of them, they told me their stories for the first time, and there's just such strength in sharing even the hell you've gone through.
Right, right.
And one woman said at the end, you know, I can see blue skies now for the first time because this is the first time I've ever told my whole story.
Wow.
So for me, if nobody ever reads these things, it's what I get to do with the survivors, and these women are heroes to me.
It's got to be therapeutic in a way,
yeah,
just to be able to tell the story and have somebody listening without trying to get something from
completely.
It.
And knowing that, again, like, their lives matter. You have survived this for a reason.
Mm.
So sex traffic, it kind of came from that. And I met Crystal, the director of the Rose Center, and had done Our Southern Souls with her. And she mentioned sex trafficking, and my reaction was the same as everybody else's, is that's from Thailand, that's somewhere else, that's not a problem here.
Right.
And it is a problem here, and it's learning to define it the right way. It's parents trafficking their kids for rent or drugs.
God.
I know that it's boyfriend pimps. Anything with a pimp involved, but it's boyfriends saying, hey, if you do this for me for just once, I love you, and he promises her everything. It's the same psychology as domestic violence.
Right.
And then she thinks this is her boyfriend, she's in love, and then before she knows it, she's been trafficked.
Okay.
So the interesting thing was there are three shelters, all this going on in our area. And at first the police said, we don't need to talk to you, it's not a problem. The FBI wouldn't talk to me.
The police said that it wasn't a problem?
Yeah, I had to fight for the story.
Gosh.
They're saying, no problem here, we don't need to talk to you, it's not enough. So finally, I talked to the U.S. attorney, and he said, it's here, we just can't prove it. And it was this interesting thing, and we can get people on guns and drugs, but we just can't go after sex trafficking. It's hard to get victims to talk. It's just this whole
excuse after excuse.
Well, I think it's just education and using the right language, understanding it. It's like domestic violence was 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I had the two shelters saying, of course we've got it. We've got these women coming in.
Right.
So finally started finding survivors to talk with me, some from Mobile. And they've been lured out, and like some of them were having to have sex with men 15, 20 times a day, and just been taken, being drugged through doing it. There was one, it sounded like a movie how she'd been lured out. She was 16, had a baby, total lack of self coming, just like this whole. And so she met this guy at a gas station, and he was nice to her. And so it all started from that, and they were a trafficking family. This was, I think, in 92.
Okay.
And they had been using ads in the personal ads in the press register for escort services and all that. And so, in the 90s, there were these, big agencies and whole trafficking circuit.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been going on forever, and then they're saying we don't have it. So it's been interesting. But I got to go finally. Thanks to the mayor, I ran into him at a party and said, what are you working on? I said, you may not like this one, but I said, and he said, how's it going? I said, nobody's talking to me. And so the mayor brought in his team, and James Barber and John Barber got involved with it, and they were great. And I got to go on a prostitution sting.
Right.
And that was pretty amazing. But they found their first victim during that sting and brought in the Rose Center. So it was neat watching all the pieces coming together. And there's
resources.
A moment to feel like journalism really does work.
Well, there are a couple of things on that I just want to touch on.
Okay.
The first thing that struck me when I was reading the Lanyap article was being able to associate places that you mentioned in this story with places in Mobile, Alabama.
Correct.
So the first thing that you said was, it's happening here.
Right.
Right here in Mobile. There were some statewide articles later on that talked about the corridor and how people get trafficked up and down the highways.
Mm-hmm.
And they talked about that intersection of 65 and 20 that's happening up there, and the amount of activities happening there. But it's all over the state. It is right here in Mobile, Alabama. And some of the areas that were highlighted in the story are areas that I readily recognize.
Right.
The second thing that stood out to me was Did you guys ever see the movie Usual Suspects? Mm-mm. Okay. So the Usual Suspects, there was a scene in there where there was a character named Kaiser Sose, and he basically said his quote. He was like, "The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world that he didn't exist." And that's what I end up thinking about when it comes to anything related to sex trafficking, is this notion that we're trying to make it look like it doesn't exist.
And can I just say, it's a demand thing. If men did not demand it, did not want it, did not want underage girls, this was the crazy thing for me, is realizing that the underage girl thing. And one of them, she talked about how she was 18, advertised as 16, but they tried to even make her look younger. Mm-hmm. But there was a principal from a local from a school in our area, and he would always want her to dress up in pigtails and things.
Mm-hmm.
High school principal. But she's, you know, it's doctors, lawyers, everybody coming and using prostitution. Our prostitution, the sting that day started at 6:30 that morning, and that was the first time they'd done one that early.
Right.
And I mean, that was happening from 6:30 in the morning. Men wanted to get quickies before. So it's a demand. If the demand wasn't there, there wouldn't be, you know.
Well, how do you think you stop that?
Well, here's one thing that I want to say before we get into that. And we've got just about a minute left.
Did you mean to be getting into things like this
is
today?
A men problem.
Right.
And a lot of times people don't want to accept accountability for that. And if this is a moment when we can start to make a change, it's going to start with men not paying for sex.
Right.
I don't usually get too spun up about stuff like this, but we know it is a male problem. Zoe, you were going to say something?
No, I just – I don't. How do you think that the culture can be changed, or what can we even do?
My soapbox is childhood sexual abuse. Keep your hands and other body parts off kids. It starts with childhood sexual abuse, even childhood sexual abuse of men.
Okay. Well, that is going to have to be it for this evening. Thank you so much for coming here and sharing your thoughts with us. This is a conversation that we need to continue to have. This is not a Democratic or Republican issue. This is a human issue, and we need to do better. So thank you guys so much for tuning into Kennedy for Alabama for our 7th episode. We've really enjoyed having you guys listen. Please continue to stay in contact with us over social media, and we will look forward to seeing you about this time next week. So until then, my name is Robert Kennedy Jr. I am your Chief Accountability Advocate, and this has been Kennedy for Alabama.